I would say the majority of our clients have some type of net zero ambition or some type of net zero commitment. And one of the primary considerations that our clients are having now, and the questions they're wrestling with, is how to orient their portfolios to meet the net zero considerations that they have. So that is a unifying theme that we see across our clients, how to think about clients and how climate and how to embed climate in their portfolios.
Welcome to another episode of the ESG Factor podcast. Today I'm talking with Ava Jackson from the BlackRock Sustainable Investing team.
Hi Vincent, nice to be here today.
Hi Ava. We might start by you telling us a little bit about what your team does at BlackRock.
Absolutely. So I'm a member of the core BlackRock Sustainable Investing team. We are the core center of expertise for sustainability at BlackRock. There are over 40 people in the core sustainable investing team globally. Our primary role is to work with investment teams to build out our sustainable product range, to work with investment teams on their investment processes, on integrating ESG insights into their investment process, but also work with clients in defining their own sustainability propositions and working with clients to achieve the sustainability ambitions they have themselves. The other primary important part of the role of the team is to define the product frameworks and the taxonomies and the policies which govern sustainability across the firm from an investment perspective.
Okay, so you mentioned the preferences of the clients. Is that one of the greatest challenges to try and articulate those preferences that they have when it comes to sustainability?
It is certainly a key challenge in so much that clients do have certain bespoke sustainability preferences. And in particular, when we think about where we sit today here in Europe, where you have potentially different sustainability preferences arising from cultural considerations or from arising from industry frameworks that have been developed, which are guiding the sustainability preferences in some countries. I would say one specific theme which clients are embracing as a whole, and it comes up in almost every conversation we have with clients with regard to sustainability, and has done for at least the last year, is climate and net zero considerations. I would say the majority of our clients have some type of net zero ambition or some type of net zero commitment. And one of the primary considerations that our clients are having now, and the questions they're wrestling with, is how to orient their portfolios to meet the net zero considerations that they have. So that is a unifying theme that we see across our clients, how to think about clients and how climate and how to embed climate in their portfolios. But there are certainly differences and approaches depending on the client that we are speaking to.
Okay, so climate is consistent right across the investment process with a lot of clients now and this objective around net zero. How does that translate in terms of the return objectives? Because obviously, if somebody has very specific climate objectives, do they also have to consider that sometimes they may have to set their return objectives in line with their climate objectives? In other words, sometimes there may be a compromise in terms of return if they're really trying to meet very strict net zero objectives.
So it's an interesting question, and I would probably say the two parts to the answer to that question. A number of years ago, maybe 3-4 years ago, a lot of the conversations that we had with clients was around the why of sustainable investing. So a lot of the conversations were around returns, the return thesis, and what that return thesis was for sustainable investing. And indeed, if one was targeting a ESG objective, would that be value decretive? I think that the conversation has changed, and it certainly changed even 2 years ago here in Europe, where there is, and we as a firm operate from the perspective that climate risk is investment risk, and managing that investment risk in processes appropriately leads to better long-term risk-adjusted returns and more resilient portfolios. And that's certainly a thesis that we see adopted more broadly as well across our clients. So the type of conversation we have with our clients now has shifted from the why of sustainable investing to the how of sustainable sustainable investing and how to implement sustainability considerations into portfolios.
And when you talk about climate risk as investment risk, is that demonstrating to clients in raw numbers, look, this is the potential impact on a portfolio? And is that quite a challenging thing to do because you're projecting out into the future the impact of specific climate outcomes?
Absolutely. I would love to say it was a simple and easy thing to do, but I think that's you're touching on a very key and fundamental point: the importance of data and analytics that accurately allow the modeling and assessment of forward-looking climate considerations in a specific portfolio. We have the BlackRock Investment Institute, which is focused on developing research in that regard, and there is evidence that sustainability, obviously evidence around physical climate risk, that the cost of physical climate risk has been increasing and increasing at pace. I think the number was something like $210 billion of costs relating to climate risk in 2020. And the World Economic Forum actually has noted as well that more than half of the world's total GDP has a direct or indirect dependency on nature. So there is evidence that if we don't take into account that physical risk and the transition risk and climate risk into portfolio considerations, that will result in specific outcomes for portfolios and not optimal outcomes for portfolios.
Being obviously the largest investment manager in the world, you're interacting with these companies. Are you having conversations that you feel that are starting to have an impact in terms of changing things?
So we are, yes, the largest asset manager in the world. I think it's a $9.5 trillion of assets that we manage globally, of course, and a large portion of that, $5 trillion or so, is in our index book. So engaging with companies and stewardship is very much part of our fiduciary duty here at the firm. We have invested in a very large corporate stewardship team. We have over 70 professionals whose primary role is to engage with companies and perform voting actions for those companies and comply with our stewardship responsibilities. A few years ago, we developed what we call a climate focus universe, and we identified initially 400 companies, and that's now increased to over 1,000 companies that account for over 90% of Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions globally. And we engage with these companies as a priority on the nature of their disclosures, on their objectives for transitioning their business models, and we will and we engage with them over the long term, given our nature as being an investor over the long term. And we do so in the belief that orienting business plans and helping our companies orient business plans to incorporate sustainability considerations, and in particular climate considerations, will be value accretive for our clients.
And reading some of the stuff that BlackRock has produced, it's very clear that the belief on the part of the investment team at BlackRock is that the incorporation of ESG into the investment process provides better long-term risk-adjusted returns. Now, at the same time, there's a broad range of solutions. You're invested in global companies. And so that leaves you open potentially to some criticism where people would say, well, you care about ESG, but then you're invested in these companies. But at the same time, I think the point that's being missed is that you're serving the needs of your clients. So can you kind of explain that source of confusion potentially where people think BlackRock are investing in all of these companies, but in actual fact, you're providing solutions to meet the needs of particular clients?
So I think it's an interesting question. So I'll take it perhaps from the angle of how we think about sustainable investing and how we think about integration. Given our belief that we need to embed sustainability considerations across the investment process, and indeed integration for us is part of that core investment process. That's embedded across all of our products, regardless of whether they have an ESG objective or whether they are solely alpha seeking in nature. Which what that means specifically is that our investment teams, we work with them, so my team works with them to equip them with the insights relevant and able to identify the specific risks within their portfolios. On the other end of the spectrum, we are developing products that have ESG objectives or have screening criteria. And at BlackRock, we have a product framework which all of our products need to meet in order to be considered as sustainable at product and meet these specific definitions. It's not one that we developed in an insular way. We, of course, looked at where the industry was in terms of their own frameworks. It's one very closely modeled on the UN PRI framework. So from the left, avoid, to the right, advance. In avoid are those products that pursue exclusionary strategies based on controversial sectors or controversial behaviors. And to the right, we have those strategies that have an ESG objective and that are looking to do more, all the way through to those products that are impact aligned to specific principles, being the International Finance Corporation operating principles for impact management. So we do provide that full spectrum of solutions to our clients. But we do have that clear product framework, which our products need to meet in order to be considered sustainable at BlackRock.
And so if you look at the amount of assets under management, let's say categorized as sustainable investment, 35 trillion, it's massive numbers that have been thrown out. Is it a question that we need more investors to align their preferences to solutions that are actually having a greater impact? Or is it the reality is that it'll take some time for everybody to move to that side of the spectrum?
I think as a firm, it's our view is very much to achieve the objectives of the Paris Agreement. So back in 2015, sustainable finance won't do that alone. We've been quite clear that government needs to lead, needs to set the standards, needs to set the regulations. Obviously, companies and finance are the two other areas that are needed to move the global economy towards meeting our objectives of the net zero transition. But government being a primary leader in setting those frameworks and setting those standards, putting a price on carbon and deciding on infrastructure investment is very key. Companies themselves are also incredibly important in that, and we see the great pace at which companies are now adopting TCFD exposures, adopting net zero objectives themselves through the SBTI or other, and transitioning their own business models, and finance being the three important lever or the important tenant to move the global economy towards the net zero ambition that we would have globally underneath the Paris Agreement. So I think there are three key tenants that do need to move in order to meet those specific objectives. Finance has an incredibly important role. We saw that underpinned in COP26 last year, where the private sector really came to the fore, and the importance of public-private partnerships, for example, and innovation in public private partnerships is key to direct capital to emerging markets, where of course a lot of this investment needs to be made. But we do think as a firm there are three primary actors that do need to move in order to move the global economy itself to meet the Paris Agreement.
Your point on the product framework at BlackRock, I know working with advisors, one of the things that I try to help them with is having a good fund categorization framework in place so that they can, I suppose, better align the solutions with the preferences of their clients without constantly reinventing the wheel. Is that framework at BlackRock set up to align with the likes of SFDR and the different regulations that are coming in? And do you believe that the regulation that's coming in is actually helping better align preferences with solutions, or is it just adding to more confusion?
That is a very, very good question. And we have spent a lot of time thinking about our product framework, working on SFDR, working on MiFID, working on the EU taxonomy, as well as the specific industry frameworks. We would certainly welcome the standards that are being set by the European Union and the European Commission, providing frameworks for sustainable investing. If we think the frameworks themselves provide a mechanism to help investors understand what a sustainable product is looking to achieve, it creates a level of standardization. And if we think about some of the criticism, I think you referenced some of the criticism of sustainable investing. What's ultimately incredibly important to address some of that criticism is the need for transparency. So sustainable products doing what they say they will do, and sustainable products doing what the end investor thinks that that sustainable product is doing. So SFDR is already taking that some way through the Article 8 and Article 9 definitions. The EU taxonomy will, of course, take that another step further, creating that standardization at an even more granular level. MiFID helping wealth managers themselves think about how to address in a standardized way sustainability characteristics and match those to the sustainability preferences to their own end clients. So the sustainable frameworks are certainly creating transparency in an industry which is very, very welcoming. Our product framework was, and we constantly challenge ourselves to ensure that we are meeting the ever-raising bar, I would say, of sustainable investing. So intensely looking at and scrutinizing our own product categories and ensuring that these product categories are meeting the needs of our clients. We do have a very strict definition of impact. It is, as I mentioned, aligned with the IFC operating principles. Also, all products that are defined or named as impact here at BlackRock are also independently audited by the Impact Management Project. So there's quite a lot of transparency on that in itself. That doesn't align, for example, to Article 9. Article 9 not being an impact under SFDR, not being an impact category itself. And our Article 9 would align for us to a segment of our thematic products and our impact products. So our product framework doesn't match exactly one for one the Article 8 and Article 9 definitions, albeit these are certainly categorizations that we think through and that we assess for those products that we want to, that we develop to meet the sustainable criteria that we have across our own product taxonomy.
Okay. I mean, for me, working with advisors and working with other decision makers, the job really is to help the average individual to incorporate this into their investments and their saving for retirement or their saving for some specific objective. Is there a way to make this more straightforward for people, or is it a case of that it's just going to take time and like risk and return, we'll arrive at some simplified version, not perfect, but some version that at least, you know, whether it be, you know, you look at risk 1 to 7, 1 to 5, whatever it may be on a spectrum, and then you've assumptions around return. Is that ultimately where we'll go? We'll go through all this complexity and then we'll come back around to something that kind of can be translated in a language that the average individual can understand.
So one of the key tenets that we try to help our clients with is actually simplifying some of the complexity that is in the sustainable investing landscape at the moment. There is, of course, the principal adverse sustainability indicators on one hand, sustainable investments, which doesn't yet have a cohesive or consistent definition across all manufacturers. Then there's the EU taxonomy now emerging, and of course, from an end client perspective, it can be very confusing to determine what each of these methodologies is looking to do exactly. So I think one of the key objectives we have is to partner with our clients to help simplify some of that complexity. I would say over the medium term, as MiFID now is being rolled out from August, and these end, the wealth distributors would now need to really formulate their questionnaires and send these out to end clients. We think the most important aspect is to be as transparent as we can across our product range to help those clients understand what our sustainable products are doing. So we have implemented the implied temperature metric, for example, across a portion of our index funds. The plan is to roll that out across the rest of the index universe when we believe the data is sufficiently available. I think it's across 80% of our products at the moment, also across our active products. And prior to that, we also implemented sustainability characteristics and business involvement scores or percentage allocations across our websites as well, at product level, so for across all of our mutual funds, to make that information available to the end client. It certainly will be a complex period to navigate. over the next 18 to 24 months as MiFID is implemented. As, of course, level two of the SFDR will mean that as manufacturers, we will be publishing annexes to our products from January. So that will be even more information that will be we will be providing to clients. But ultimately, we do think it will create a more level playing field. We see the direction of travel actually being quite good for the end client, given that they will have more information in a more consistent way to assess sustainable products and assess what those sustainable products are doing. So we think in the longer term, this will create quite a lot of transparency, quite a lot of standardization. It's just going to be a little bit painful over the next period of time whilst it's being implemented.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge because there's a massive knowledge gap. Even though ESG has become quite mainstream over the last couple of years, it's still, I certainly find that there's still a massive knowledge gap when it comes to the implementation. And I know I've worked as an advisor as well. I know the average client doesn't come to your office telling you what they want exactly. They're coming with questions to be guided on an investment strategy. And when the advisors and other capital allocators are still struggling to come to terms with it, it can be really difficult. So I'm wondering over, you know, you're an investment manager, $9.5 trillion, I think you mentioned, under management. Is it difficult at the same time, you know, because you have a team of 40 people, I think you said, it's a big organization. Is there challenges you run into yourself in terms of moving this forward?
I think it's a very good question. I would say, coming back to an earlier question you had, the operating environment and the different challenges that our clients are looking to solve for, I would say, would be one of the challenges we have ourselves. If I think about the institutional client segment and differentiate that to the wealth client segment and the key trends that we're seeing there and some of those challenges that we see in both. Wealth is very much focused on the topic we've just discussed on regulation and on orienting their own propositions and building out their sustainability propositions to future-proof them, albeit without having yet the data themselves available. So I think that would be one key challenge I would highlight, in that we are endeavoring to be as transparent as we can to our clients, albeit some of that underlying data is not yet available. I'd say Scope 3 would be perhaps a good example here, in that Scope 3 emissions data is there or thereabouts, but perhaps not at the level of robustness which we can implement at scale and incorporate into product development. So I'd say that would be one area where there is a challenge. And on the institutional client side, the number one question which our institutional clients are certainly dealing with is to think about how to orient their whole portfolios and meet their own net zero ambitions. So a key priority for us as a firm is to develop those solutions and have that full suite of solutions available for them to meet those specific needs.
Just one question on the ESG framework, which garners a lot of criticism at times because it's misunderstood. You've mentioned the big one that keeps coming up is climate risk. Has the conversation almost moved away from ESG now to climate risk, or is it a case of you broadly speaking about ESG and as you go through those three pillars, climate risk takes up a lot of time under the environmental pillar, and then obviously the governance to make sure that action has been taken?
So I think there's really two elements to that answer that as well. One of the interesting aspects which SFDR has done in implementing that good governance test across all Article 8 and all Article 9 products is we would say that good governance is now table stakes, at least across all of the product considerations. So we hadn't seen, in particular in Europe, real demand for governance-only oriented products previously. It was, however, a mainstay and needed across all products. So that is governance, I would say, is actually a needed and imperative for all sustainability products. I think the interesting aspect then is around climate and around social. Climate being the number one topic we hear from clients, but social being a very close second. And in particular, if we think about the rise of stakeholder capitalism and the increasing focus on companies needing to embrace their whole stakeholder environment, being employees, being supply chains, being the communities within which they work. work already really highlighted in 2020 in given the pandemic, but that is certainly an increasing area of interest for product development, social issues, and stakeholder capitalism as a whole. So I would say climate certainly being a key topic, and perhaps the topic which clients are looking to solve for in the immediate term, but social very closely following.
Okay. And this idea of stakeholder capitalism, the consideration of stakeholders, has been around for a while, talked about by companies, and it sounds great, but a lot of times companies don't actually take the stuff seriously. But do you feel that that's changing? And is it about companies actually understanding that if you are going to operate for the long term, that you have to do so in tandem with your communities, your stakeholders? But is that completely against the short-term mentality that permeates our culture of capitalism that exists today?
So I would I would maybe refer to the materiality approach that we take here at BlackRock and how we think about sustainability and that double bottom line, and maybe give it a concrete example around that. So we have built our own investment framework, which incorporates E, S, and G considerations. It's a bottom-up framework incorporating multiple different data sets, including alternative data sets. And I'll build on that in a moment. And we overlay that raw data with a series of KPIs, such as a talent management indicator, such as a cybersecurity alert. And we overlay that investment framework with the SASB materiality framework to map the financial material KPIs to a specific sector. And that ultimately leads into KPIs and assessments at the company level. To your question, one of the KPIs is actually the talent management KPI. And we source the data from Glassdoor, so the online employee site where reviews can be given. And the sustainability aspect that we look at is employee retention, the employee reviews. And we have noted that there is the financial double line here, in that companies that rate lower in terms of employee retention and job satisfaction, they have lower employee retention, and that then impacts turnover. So I would say there is already direct causation between the two. So I don't think it's, I think stakeholder capitalism, you're right, is a term that's used quite broadly. But when you begin to drill down into the specific factors of stakeholder capitalism, that's where I think it can be brought to life in a more robust way.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense, intuitive sense. It's just the application, I think, is the challenge at times when executives are focused on the next quarter's earnings. And finally, you know, this is an area that is evolving rapidly. There's new regulation coming out every 3 months, it seems. What's next, do you think, for the sustainability journey for BlackRock?
So it's a key question for us, in particular where we see the direction of travel in terms of sustainability in Europe, where we see such demand for sustainable products. And last year, over 70% of our product development was actually in Article 8 and Article 9 SFDR products. Key for us is to work with our clients to help them solve the questions that they themselves are asking themselves. So one, support them on providing the tools, the data and analytics to determine where they are already now on their net zero journey, but also how they want to orient their portfolios and how we can help them orient their portfolios to achieve their own sustainability ambitions over the coming future. So priority really number one, really to improve the tools and data and analytics we have available, one, to our investment teams, but also to our clients to help them themselves in that journey. And then secondly, very much to further develop our solutions in order to meet the needs that we see coming from our clients, continue that innovation to develop products both in climate, also in biodiversity, where we also see nascent demand and growing demand, social and other further sustainability themes. So I think product development is the other core aspect to help our clients really transition their whole portfolios to achieve those sustainability ambitions.
Great. Well, as the largest investment manager in the world, I wish you the best on your journey. Ava Jackson, Director of the BlackRock Sustainable Investing Team, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Vince.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the ESG Factor podcast. If you'd like to share any thoughts or feedback on today's episode, then you can email me at vincent@theesgfactor.com. Also, if you'd like to see the making of more independent content like this, you can join our Patreon community online. Just visit theesgfactor.com.